G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 13A.
We were considering the mind of Christ as our form of information that in a holistic consciousness we have to see that whatever we investigate must be done from the point of view that we have the mind of Christ, so that we have always that mind within us, or at least entertain and culture that mind which is also God, that mind which knows all, which understands all, that can see all, that can discover all, that can reveal all, that knows all. And so with a conscious awareness of that all-knowing mind, we really should approach our study. This study does not only concern the Bible and the textbook, because we also have to be able to interpret the world, so that it is always good that if we can see that with the mind of Christ we find a right answer and a better answer, if we consider and approach reality or the world with the mind of Christ. The same thing applies if we read books, if we are engaged in the medias, whatever they are, that we use that mind of Christ which is able to depict that, what Mrs. Eddy said, that there are always gleams of divinity, that there are always here and there expressions from that divine science that breaks through in the world and in the thinker of the world. So that we have a holistic attitude and not a narrow attitude, that the mind of Christ is only any good for the reading of the Bible and the textbook, but to read the world. That is then alone holistic. We can do that even more, as nowadays in all fields of science one begins to see that mind or intelligence is a form of information that is independent of the human brain, that is independent of people. The psychologists call it perhaps the supra-consciousness. The cyberneticians call it that information universe, that the universe thinks, that the universe is conscious, not the mind is conscious. And so we have various approaches today, and we'll see even more so in the future, that from every angle one begins to see that there is a universal mind at work, that universal mind which is the divine mind, which breaks through the clouds somehow in every field of science. I think we are on the threshold of a completely new realm, of a completely new Weltanschauung. This naturally demands that our mind of Christ is not just a term, is not just a religious feeling. It's so easy to say, well, every man has the mind of Christ and we work with the mind of Christ. That's just saying things. That's not the substance of it. It needs a real devotion and a real culture to culture this consciousness, that more and more we, in a natural way, so to say, without actually having to think about it, because consciousness is not thinking, without actually then thinking about it, there is a sounding board within us, a resonance. Is that the right term? A resonance, a sounding board within us that reacts constantly on the information of the divine mind, so that it becomes an unlabored motion of the divine mind to be aware of the information of the divine mind. This is really what Mrs. Eddy tries to explain in that enormous sixth chapter in the textbook, where she says that in science, mind is one. It's just one. If it's one, then it's the mind of all. And therefore, not only the mind that is in all the people, or can be in all the people, but that mind is all, it means that the whole universe is one field of mind, one realm of mind. And it's not something that is dependent on people. So in science, she says, mind is one, including, and now we see how she translates it, including God and his thoughts. So we know that God doesn't think. If she uses the wording, God and his thoughts, God's thoughts, she naturally tries out words, she tries out the phraseology, how on earth she can convey what she means. She means that mind is one, and that expresses itself as, not only as God, as noumenon and phenomena, not only as God who is mind, but all that field of mind is implied by it, that field of mind, that realm of mind, which shows itself in a translated form as God's thoughts, as that mentality or that information which flows to us and gives us the mind of Christ, gives us divine thoughts, as she seldom says, because she knows that divine thoughts is a translation from mind to divine ideas translating themselves even further down. That's why we need levels further down to forms of thought, of divine thoughts, of positive thoughts and not of negative thoughts. So we feel more and more that we live in a mind universe, in an information universe, in a universe that thinks, as some cyberneticians put it, a universe that thinks, not a universe of people and those people think, but it is much a higher concept, namely a universe that thinks, mind dwelling in the realm of mind, mind roaming, so to say, in the realm of mind. And that is the realm, the field of mind. Now, mind is a super symbol for all the aspects and all the criteria for a mind science. She knows that mind has a science, that there is a divine mind science, in contrast to the human mind that puts up sciences and constructs sciences. So that mind science, with a capital M, naturally must contain all the scientific criteria that we were contemplating during the last 10 hours or so. And so we can see that we can only have that mind, which is God, if we have that scientific mind, which is the science of mind, God. Therefore, that we have to see that we free ourselves of the human mind, of the realm of the human mind, and the erroneous mind, and limited mind, etc., and that we culture ourselves in those criteria that we were seeing were constituting a holistic science, the science of the divine mind. So we have a clear method along which we can work in the future. We are not at loss and go home and say, now what on earth can I do? I don't have the mind of Christ. I don't feel that I have the mind of Christ. Now we have seen that there is a method, an ordered method, how we can culture ourselves step by step into that atmosphere of mind. And suddenly I say, into the atmosphere of mind. You know, science defined divinely, she said, is the atmosphere of God. And so you can see that if we take the scientific criteria and culture that, that culturing builds up an atmosphere, a tonality, which we also used to say, a tonality of this criteria. So if we start out on that long way, we at least have a very good guiding line, a secure guiding line. We are not going astray. We are not going to find our way in the wilderness, but we are going along the way of science. To weave one thread of science through the looms of time. Though she said that that is not an easy job, but we know that red thread that goes right through science by seeing that we have first to culture ourselves in our thinking, in terms of divine ideas. These are the elements. So we begin our reformation and restructuring of our consciousness by seeing that we engage our consciousness as much as we can and as often as we are aware of in the tonality of the ideas of God. Then little by little these ideas of God fall into place as categories of divine science. The main categories of the capitalized terms. And little by little, as we contemplate them in our quiet hours and contemplate the ideas of mind and the ideas of spirit, we suddenly get the atmosphere of what mind means, of what that funny mind, capital M, means. And little by little, contemplating the ideas of spirit, we get the atmosphere, the tonality of spirit. And so is soul and principle, life, truth, and love. And suddenly that science that has been construed humanly to give us the grid through that will lead us and guide us in our research and in our scientific endeavor becomes a tonality of mind, of spirit, of soul. And later, as we see that they are categories of being, and we contemplate really what is the category of the word order, what does the word order as a whole mean, what does the Christ order as a whole mean, what does the Christianity order as a whole mean, what does the science order as a whole mean. If we begin to contemplate what does really the category of the synonymous term for God mean, the operational sense of God mean, the level sense of God mean, in the way that we contemplate that and nurture that and pray about it and worship it and stand in awe before it and listen to it, little by little, we free ourselves from the letter. We free ourselves from concepts, from the letter, and little by little, we get the tone of it, which we call tonality, which we just, with the same right, could call the atmosphere of it. And that leads us, as you see, to the new sense of science, divinely defined, the atmosphere of God. So doing that, little by little, we begin to feel and to sense that these three great categories of being are always working together. And so we get a system thinking. And that system thinking at the beginning seems to be an intellectual effort that we have to think, well, how is it if the word, or if the seven synonymous term are working together with the operational sense of the four sides, and how it is when they begin to work together with the four levels. So at the beginning, it's an intellectual endeavor. It takes some discipline in thinking, and the more we are disciplined in that thinking and devote ourselves to that, are quiet within ourselves, sit back in a nice easy chair, and just look out into the infinitude of those three categories working together, little by little, that intellectual thinking ability, activity becomes an atmosphere. We begin to feel the rhythm of that going together of those three great categories, and we get the atmosphere of the system. And as we get the atmosphere of the system, it overwhelms us that with that simple system, we really can get hold of the whole of being. And so as we contemplate that system, we will not repeat always the same line of reasoning. We don't get into a routine of it, because every time it will be new, every time something else becomes more important in that system, so suddenly some aspect of that system becomes the accent or the vantage point from which we look at it, and we have already a sense of structure, of restructuring the system to get structures. And that whole system suddenly begins to appear to us as structures that are colorful, that are varied, that there is an infinite variety of those structures, though always built on the 7 + 4 + 4, on that simplicity of it. And little by little we feel the whole kaleidoscopic rhythm, so to say, of that system as bringing forth always a new angle, a new aspect of that system. And we get the atmosphere of structuring, restructuring, structuring, restructuring, always anew. And suddenly the whole Bible and the whole textbook appears as a spiritual concept to us, as showing one structure after the other, the infinite variety and colorfulness of structures that the Bible and the textbook shows. And we feel the atmosphere of structuralism. And as we do that, we can see that in presenting these structures, we suddenly begin to feel something, that these structures are not all on the same level, that they are not always being showing a subject that has to do just with one level of experience, that suddenly we feel that we come to higher levels of experience. And so in a natural way, without that we want to do it, the self-dynamic sense of a science is bringing forth the concept of dimensionalism. And so suddenly at the beginning we have to become aware of this dimension. It's still first then again an intellectual effort that we have to think, how can I separate these levels? What are the criteria for separating one level of the other level, and so on, until we get hold of it intellectually. The moment we see it intellectually, it begins to impress our consciousness. We begin to see the infinite possibilities of thinking dimensionally, that nothing is left out in our whole experience that finds no place within that dimensional sense. And little by little that touches us. We stand in awe before it. We feel this dimensionalism. We don't think anymore about the dimension. It becomes natural to our own thinking. And finally we feel the atmosphere of dimensionalism. Again, the atmosphere of divine science. And as we do that, we can't help. It is irresistible. The more we are devoted spiritually to that, the more we touch it with our best motives and purest motives and earnestness and contemplation and seeing the beauty of it and see really the promise of it, the great promise of it. We see what it can do. Suddenly a dynamic sense enters in and says, well, these levels, they always are interrelated. They are interrelated, help each other. The higher helping the lower bringing forth the higher, driving our thought to the higher, and we get a cybernetic sense of the whole system. And so little by little, this cybernetic, that self-organizing, self-controlling, self-regulating sense of divine cybernetics breaks in on our thought. And again, at the beginning, it bewilders us a little bit. We have to find first our way through it. It becomes an intellectual question where we have to think about it and sort things out until they are sorted out and they become constantly clearer. The distinctions stand out clearer and clearer. The moment they stand out clearer and clearer, we begin to sense them and not only to think about them, we feel them and gives an atmosphere and we get the whole atmosphere of a cybernetic system, which then quite naturally has its own seed within itself, which says, well, all that dynamics of being, is that just spinning the wheels? I think you say that spinning the wheels, are just going, it's just a lot of movement going on without any effect. Or has it an effect? What kind of effect has it? Does it drag us down or does it bring us higher and higher? And so the whole sense of cybernetics then suddenly begins to tell us something absolutely wonderful, which says, you know, you can trust that scientific sense of scientific divine cybernetics because it has an inbuilt mechanism that is evolutive, that brings out always a higher evolution that is striving with all its power, with all its possibilities, always to a high aim, to a high goal. You can't miss it because it's not dependent on you. It's inbuilt into the cybernetic system that you cannot escape salvation. And so suddenly that science has meaning in it, has goal in it, has purpose in it, has a high goal in it, and we feel that there is only one thing going on, that from everlasting to everlasting, the one whole has just one purpose, to manifest itself everywhere as the whole, so that all will be one, that all will be one, one with the whole, one with every part, so that there is not only the infinite one, but the infinite oneness. That is inbuilt in the science, and it releases us of all that ethical, moral, religious effort to try to reach salvation, how to get into heaven. It's no more that question. Man cannot force his way into heaven. He has no chance whatsoever. If he tries to do that, he is like that dumb man that put water on the regulator. And it doesn't do anything to the regulator except that he makes a lot of mess around that regulator with his bucket of water. And we only make a lot of mess if we try to force the way of salvation. The way of salvation is an inbuilt idea in holism. And what we have to do is to trust it, to love it, to see the bigness of it, to be still within ourselves, to see the promise that lies in our stillness, that we know that there is only one mind, that as we sit alone, isolated in our easy chair and sit back comfortably, and look out into the infinitude of the one mind, we know that that one mind is not going on in our mind, and therefore is isolated to our little study room, but that that one mind is the mind of God, is the mind of the universe, that it touches the whole universe, that it reaches over continent and ocean, that that mind reaches every mind concept, every mind small m, that any man in that on the whole earth is entertaining and is, so to say, accepting, welcoming this idea. And so suddenly, here and there pop up people, here and there a situation shows itself forth, which we were not thinking out, but which the one mind was impelling to come forth and to take form, and therefore that's the reason why suddenly on the other side of the globe somebody catches on to the higher idea. Without that, we know that person over oceans and continents, that mind is at work. And that's what happened. I was sitting alone in Zurich, hidden away in a little town, unimportant country, unimportant city, unimportant man. But right from the beginning, I knew what the apocalypse was saying, that the scientific thought reaches over continent and ocean, and that it will touch those people who are ready, who are willing, who are accepting the ideas, and they will know it. And they came forth. They came forth in every continent. So let's see that we have really in the palm of our hand the means and the method really to save the world. And we are really not coming up to our true measure and standard of manhood if we think we are too small to do the job. Paul said, we are not many mighty, but we could do the job. Let's have the same consciousness. That's the atmosphere of divine science.